cherished moments to have our elders join us like that. And Mursha Hidayat just had a birthday and turned 94. May we be so blessed to have such vigor and life force at that age. He's a great example to us all. And so is Murshida Aziza. We're really very blessed. That is Leo, the big coonhound. And you know we're live here, so we're going to have some live action. Leo, it's all right, sweetheart. But Leo has earned some gold stars. I think he may be one of the few people that's attended every class. So watch your tendency, watch your mind, watch your impulse as we listen to the sound. Are you able to sit in a equipoise within your own being and let the sound come to you? Or is the tendency to analyze the sound, to reach out and grab the sound? Just observe. Let the sound come towards you. Enter your being. And let the vibration tune. Imagine every cell is dancing and singing with delight. Every cell is the singing of the medicine bowl. And like the ringing of the temple bell, calling us forth to pray, a kind of invocation, a reminder, a remembrance, let us remember all the masters, saints, and prophets that have illuminated our path, opened our hearts, helped us to hear the inner call that has brought us to this moment and this place. We call upon them. We ask them to sit amongst us, wherever we may be in the world. For while we may be limited by time and space, they are not. And so they're here with us, watching over, guiding, blessing, and illuminating. And we especially invoke the presence of Pir Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan, that his words that we'll hear and share today together, and also practices as given by Pir Murshid, that they touch our deepest places, the deepest part of our being, awakening us. Today, we'll be continuing the body of teachings by Murshid on training the ego, which is a hearty body of teachings, and one that, of course, is so meaningful for us. You know, we're born into this world, fresh and new, and the conditioning of our life helps us to develop these structures that help us become who we are, but at a certain point, maybe it's good to start to dismantle that a little bit and see where that original essence, the soul essence is. It's very tender. It's very gentle. And of course, sometimes it creates an openness within us that perhaps we feel we often would rather protect. But when the whole world is your prayer cushion, where do you go? Where do you hide? It's a process. And Murshid is giving us some good lessons along the way. So this particular body of teachings is from the Gathas, and we're again moving in a sequence, and we're in Gatha 2 on Saluk, or one might call it moral culture in English. And excuse me just one moment. This is on section 6, training, the training of the ego, training by refraining from free impulses. Just, we could stop there and think about that. Training by refraining from free impulses. How often we have throughout the day an impulse, and we follow it very freely, frequently. We don't stop to think. And so, Murshid, in just these few short paragraphs, really only a few sentences, but we're going to try to also emphasize it with practices, gives us so much to contemplate. The wise, knowing the nature of the ego is to rise and to move and to disturb the atmosphere, practice in their lives to refrain the ego from its free impulses. The tendency of the ego is to rise shows itself in the desire of standing when others are sitting, and running when others are walking, and dancing when others are standing. In the mental plane, the desire to be proud, the desire to be vain, to show conceit, to show one's superiority over others, all come from the ego. Now, I'd like to just say a few words about this statement here. The tendency of the ego is to rise, shows itself in the desire of standing when others are sitting. In the West, we might not consider that so much of a matter of ego. But I can say in the East, for example, if you're in the presence of someone that is seen in a more elevated social status or spiritual status, or even someone that is older than oneself, one doesn't elevate one's head above that person as a sign of respect. So here, putting it in context and thinking about Murshid's own culture, being from the East, being from the India, it may help us understand this a little bit better. But we all can understand that also, perhaps in the workplace, we've been seated and someone has come to discuss something with us and they're maybe towering over us and talking to us. You know, that feeling of that energy, you know, it's subtle, but we feel it anyway. Even in this culture, we understand that. And of course, perhaps we would much prefer that someone sit with us and discuss something instead of taking that posture. So you can see through that example what Murshid is trying to illustrate here. And again, running when others are walking. So is there a tendency even that one has one's own rhythm and is unwilling to modify that rhythm in order to accommodate another? That's interesting to consider. I see that frequently when children are even with their parents. They have the tendency to want to run ahead. Or especially if I noticed one day I was at just entering into a store and there was a mother and a daughter. And the mother was elderly and the daughter was probably around my age. And the mother was moving very slowly, and the daughter, of course, you know, was moving not just enough ahead to be helpful, but far enough ahead to indicate a kind of impatience or an impulse. So that is also interesting, you know. I think one of the great lessons that we, maybe some of us in Kansas City, had was Guru Panaprath, who was a great raga master, would visit us in Kansas City at the camps. And he walked so slow. And he talked so slow. It was very interesting. And sometimes I would just thought, it's such a great practice. Just get a distance behind him and pick up that pace. See if one can do it. Because my pace is fairly quick, naturally, but it was like, what happens to get in that rhythm? And of course, those of us that have seen the films of Murshid Hazrat Anai Khan know he also had that rhythm. It wasn't that he moved quickly all the time. In fact, there's some wonderful stories of him taking a train ride, and the trains used to stop, and you'd get off, and you'd have a meal, and then you'd get back on, and he'd just eat very slowly, and the train was about to pull away, and people around him were getting very anxious. And you know what? He said, "Don't worry, another one will come." Mm-hmm. "Don't worry, another one will come." He didn't let that rhythm get disturbed. And also of dancing when others are standing, so this tendency to want to move. Another example by Guruji Panaprath is when he would come and he would teach us raga singing, the tendency is to want to start to sway to the music. And he'd say, "Don't move. Control that." He wanted the concentration to be on following the sound and not the body to move. It was very interesting. But again, he was from India, so you see that impulse is there, that maybe not even that impulse, but that tendency or that knowledge. You know, I know that even, and perhaps some of you experience this, at our dinner table, you know, sometimes I'd want to hum or move, and I was always told, don't do that, it's not polite, you know, or don't sing unless everybody's singing, you know. So there can be that tendency in us to want to do that. We get a tune caught in our head, or there's something happening in the background, and we want to start following that. Okay. But it's good to be sensitive to these things and to feel the impulses within the atmosphere, within the people around us, and how we are sometimes not sensitive to that, and can we be more so as a matter of training the ego. Does anyone think that I'll just say, yes, I could be more sensitive. Does anyone else feel that way in the room? Some hands going up. Okay. So, I mean, it's a matter of just awakening and becoming sensitive. So one of the ways that we can train these natural impulses is by training the breath. Training the breath. And when we observe our breath, and people will often say things, for example, they'll say something to me where I'm extremely fatigued all the time. And my question is, when you observe your breath, what's happening? Well, I have the tendency to take a quick inhalation, but my exhalation is very long. And just by hearing themselves say that, they start to understand, oh, you know, maybe I'm grabbing things and then I'm sort of hanging on to them, but then I'm also exhausting myself as the resistance to let go of the breath. Very interesting to think about it and to observe. Or someone that's more excitable and would like to have more of a feeling of calm and quiet maybe has a more rapid breath, and by slowing it, there can be more of a metered way of coping in one's mind, one's emotions, and one's body. So observing the breath is very key. And of course, we know in our Vipassana practice in the Buddhist tradition, observing the breath is essential. But also training the breath, observing its natural tendency and then training it or retraining it is also real essential in gaining mastery. And we can see how that would be directly connected to the training of the ego. Because, well, of course, the ego wants to breathe, or the body's going to die in it along with it. So there's some logic there. So shall we try to do a rhythmic breathing practice together? And see how that works. Now, I thought we might try a practice. We don't often do it here, but I think it's a beautiful practice. It's called Kasab. Some people may call it pranayama. Some people may call it alternate nostril breathing. But when you think about it, the way we're going to do the practice today, we're going to begin by breathing in through the left nostril. We're going to hold the breath, and we're going to breathe out through the right. Then we're going to breathe in through the right, and we're going to hold, and we're going to breathe out through the left. That will be one cycle, of which we'll do five, and I'll count. I have some music that I hope will work for us here and to keep us in rhythm. And I'll say breathe in left, hold out right. We'll keep on track that way. But I'd like to say a little bit about the practice. In one sense, we're training a new rhythm. We're controlling the rhythm. But I've been thinking about this, and as a practice, how really very profound it is, because, of course, we're activating this more receptive side of our being, and then the more active side of our being. and then the active side of our being and the receptive part of our being. And I think how this might relate to the beautiful prayer, the morning prayer, psalm. And Murshid says, "The east and the west, the worlds above and below, the seeing and unseen beings. The east, where the sun rises, the more active principle, reaching its zenith. The west, where it's waiting to receive the sun, the more receptive principle, the sun goes down. Of the worlds above, breathing in, rising in energy, but also this whole aspect of rising and transcendence. Of the worlds above and below, the world of eminence, of incarnation. Of the seen, the outer world, this, in some ways, appearances that perhaps are veiling the greater reality of the unseen, the inner world. Now, you all know the prayer, and there's no need to kind of grasp at concepts, but think about it as we're doing this breath, how it moves in this way and has a beautiful synchronicity with this prayer. Okay. The count is in 4, hold 8, out 4. In 4, hold 8, out 4. And I'm going to try an experiment here. We'll see if it's successful. I hope the sound comes through in the broadcast. But first we'll just listen and we'll get the rhythm, God willing. And I'll put this closer to the speaker. Hopefully it'll work. And you can hear the rhythm. This is actually a 5-string tambura sound. So you'll hear 4, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. So on that 5th string, there's a slight turn of the breath. Can you all hear it? 1, 2, 3. And just start for a few moments following this sound and just breathing out, in, out, in, out, in. So the rhythm is fairly rigorous, you can see this, and it is 4 beats, again in, holding 8, 4 beats out, on a 60 beat per minute cycle. This is how Murshid Anayat Khan gave the practice. And you might think of your lungs as a kind of accordion, and your whole body is, while it is breathing, it is also being breathed. was a kind of expansion and a contraction, a kind of basset and a kind of carpet, a contraction and expansion. So close off your right nostril. You can use your fingers to control your breath, the flow of the breath. And we'll begin in a moment, breathing in first through the left. Let's breathe out, in left. Hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, hold, right, right, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in both, hold, out both, in, hold, out, 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 and relax. Notice the channels of your breath, both left and right. Notice the feeling in your body, both left and right. Can you observe your thoughts and feelings? Are there any comments or thoughts that anyone here or online would like to share?
I really appreciate what the tambura does.
Yes.
It evens the experience.
Good.
Like its own little
It is, isn't it? It's beautiful. You had a different experience?
No, I'm just, what I was recognizing in coming out of the practice is that I've often been aware of the balance of the left and right. There's a balancing that happens mm-hmm. in that breath. But I felt in this particular, and perhaps through the way that you described it, sort of this sense of also a balance between an inner and outer awareness.
Beautiful. Anything else you want to share about that? It's very beautiful. And I'm also looking at the chat window, if anyone there would like to say, out there would like to say anything. Anyone else? Was it challenging? Was it easy? Did it flow? How was that for you?
It was easy.
Good. Good. Everyone's tuned in. Beautiful. Okay. I'll move on. Also, let me ask you a question. Have you ever done something and thought, later reflected on it, and thought, oh my gosh, I was so unaware of sort of what might have occurred when I was not totally awake or thinking about something? You know, you're kind of embarrassed. Have you embarrassed yourself in some way? And maybe it's only in hindsight. Does anyone ever have that experience? Maybe not even in the moment, but it's just kind of after the fact, like, say, duh, you know, I'm realizing now what I've done, and oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't done it, but I did. What can I learn from it? And why wasn't I more thoughtful or awake in that moment? Has anyone ever had that experience? Most of us have. I think being a human being, we have. It's part of it. Well, there's also a wonderful practice. And here again, when Mersha talks about the impulse to stand when others are sitting, perhaps we've even done something like that. And then in hindsight thought, oh my goodness, I wonder how they observed that or took that into their being. How could it have been taken? You know what I'm saying? And then you have a little regret. Well, regret is very good, but only if we're really willing to learn from it and change ourselves. And sometimes the impulse, while we're speaking of the word impulse, is maybe to beat ourselves up, but perhaps it's better to pray. To pray. Instead of getting in the machinations of the mind, how I would have, I should have, I could have. Because we're always brilliant after the fact and we know exactly how we should have acted, am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, if we learn from it, then we will be in the future. But there is this beautiful practice. And it's perhaps one that might even be taken up daily when these arise, these thoughts and these feelings arise for us. And that practice is astaghfirullah, astaghfirullah, astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah is this act of purification, an act of hiding one's faults from others while hiding them from oneself so one can be bearable in one's own skin when we have those challenging times. It helps us not be so hard on ourselves so that we can learn the lesson and move on without getting caught in the lesson. It's a divine protection. It's a divine protection. It means, God, forgive me. May I be forgiven. It means, even used in the colloquial language, if you would accidentally step on someone's toe or bump into them, astaghfirullah. Please pardon me. I'm sorry, forgive me. Astaghfirullah.
In Sanskrit?
It's actually Arabic. Arabic. And one could say, I love this poetical way of expressing astaghfirullah. I bask in the purifying presence of God. Like basking in the sun, the great sun, I bask in the purifying presence of God. I bask in the purifying presence of God. So let's intone Astaghfirullah. And then the vibration will become more subtle. And then ultimately internal. And remember what's been said about these three phases of recitation. One sets up a vibratory frequency for one's body, aloud. The most gross manifestation is the material world. Then whispering, speaking with a deep feeling to one's own heart, and then silently, feeling the vibration in one's soul, heal my body, heart, and soul. Feel the movement of the group harmonize with each other in rhythm. Notice the impulse to either go too slow or go too fast. Give up that impulse and feel each other. Astaghfirullah, 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 Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah, 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 Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah, 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 Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah, 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 Astaghfirullah. Just silently feel the vibration. Feel that purifying presence. Amen.